Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Every week on Sci-Fi, 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 we review and rate another science fiction or fantasy book. And this week we are covering Every Heart a Doorway by Seanan McGuire.
Kevin. Technically, I wouldn't say we really rate them. We just sort of talk about them.
Blather.
Yes.
Every week, we feature a variety of fascinating interruptions by an entire crew of professionals.
Who are you calling a professional?
I didn't say professional what. So this week, we are reviewing Every Heart a Doorway by Seanan McGuire. Kevin, could you give us a brief description, please?
From the back of the book, Eleanor West's home for wayward children. No solicitations, no visitors, no quests. Children have always disappeared under the right conditions, slipping through the shadows under a bed or at the back of a wardrobe, tumbling down rabbit holes and into old wells and emerging somewhere else. But magical lands have little need for used-up miracle children. Nancy tumbled once, but now she's back. The things she's experienced, they change a person. The children under Miss West's care understand all too well, and each of them is seeking a way back to their own fantasy world. But Nancy's arrival marks a change at the home. There's a darkness just around each corner, and when tragedy strikes, it's up to Nancy and her newfound schoolmates to get to the heart of the matter, no matter the cost.
All right. What did everybody think? Barry?
I enjoyed it. It was a sweet listen.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
I liked it. I guess this is technically a novella, but yeah, I thought it was enjoyable.
Excellent. Yeah, my take on it is, if you like Seanan McGuire, you will absolutely love this. If you don't like her, then, well, I don't understand your literary tastes, personally. But this has everything that Seanan McGuire seems to like in all of her books made something new.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, because, you know, we've already read her other fairy tale books, or a couple of them, which you can remind me of the name.
Indexing.
Yeah, since my brain doesn't work with memory recall. I didn't know what to expect because I'm like, oh, this is another, is this going to be something like very much like Indexing or what? And
right.
It's totally different, even though it's another kind of fairy tale related thing, but it's in, you know, different in an interesting way.
Maybe we should point out we read this as part of an anthology, or listen to it as part of an anthology.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's available standalone. I don't know.
It is, actually. Okay. I don't know if that's the same reader, but it is available standalone.
Right. This was on Tor.com has a collection. This is this from the season 2 collection. So yes, you can get it by itself, or if you get the collection, you can get another 5 or 6 books that they've released as well.
Okay. Well then, we will take a brief break and we will emerge in our spoiler section, which is a magical land of high logic where nothing ever makes any sense.
I thought that was the chaos world.
We have different names for the same thing. Anyway, we shall return, for we are Sci-Fi.
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 And we're back talking about Every Heart a Doorway by Seanan McGuire. So anyway, this has all of Seanan McGuire's favorite things.
It's a lot of her trademarks.
Yeah, it has twins. It has
magic.
It has twins. It has magic. It has a lot of transgender themes and that sort of stuff going on. It has taking various forms of magical worlds and trying to organize them into some kind of coherent system.
Right. It made me think of, you know, the back of the AD&D book, you know, they have the, you know, meaning advanced Dungeons and Dragons, for in case you might think it means something else, but
doesn't mean squirrel.
Yes. But yeah, they have the little diagrams that says like, you know, this is the ethereal plane here and this, that, and like, you know, this plane, they're usually neutral and that kind of stuff. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of that when they were talking about the axes.
Right. So in this book, it's a home for wayward children, mostly girls. And Kevin apparently has something to say about that a little bit. But wayward children, mostly girls, and they all have fallen into fairyland at some point or some kind of alternate dimension. And
right.
These worlds correspond to different forms of our fantasy or gothic literature, I guess.
It's like the Disney phenomenon, but much darker.
Right, exactly.
Right, much more, you know, original fairy tales.
Yes. Of course.
You mean real life?
Yes.
my brain working how it does, you know, I thought, okay, so it's divided into high logic and high nonsense worlds, rather like organized and disorganized serial killers.
Lawful versus chaotic.
There's also the splitting up of worlds into high moral and low moral. That seems to be a...
Right. The high logic and that, right. But then there's the...
Sorry, right. Moral versus wicked, I think is what it was.
You mean right. Good versus evil?
They don't say good or evil. They just say, you know, innocent, I think, or innocent versus wicked. You know, the engineering part of my brain kicks in. It's just like, so maybe... You know, innocence is like a low entropy state, and these things have to sort of power themselves by bringing in the innocent and corrupting them in sort of a machine to keep themselves going.
Well, it was interesting because, at some point they kind of say the people who found these doorways, and they take all shapes, you know, some of them are doorways that just appear in the wall that weren't there before. Some of them are like the doorways that you're used to, and you open them and they go somewhere else.
Right.
And some of them are like, there was one that was like a tiny little thimble sized door that, you know, they just went and kind of touched it and it sucked them in or whatever. So, but they kind of covered the fact that the people found the world that they needed, you know, kind of to survive in a sense, like emotionally, you know, or just internally, that, you know, the most of these people, their family or their lives were just, you know, they weren't really accepted and they didn't really feel, you know, like they belonged to our world. And, you know, this world was a world where they could be themselves.
Okay. There was something that someone said in the book that little girls tended to fall into these extra worlds disproportionately. And why was that?
Yeah, that was one of the few things that sort of irritated me about the book, you know, as a sort of a knee-jerk reaction, because they said, well, little boys, you know, boys will be boys. And they're like, that was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy because people are expecting boys to run around and be crazy. So they are always looking for them to go astray. And so because of that, if they went astray, they would quickly find them before they found a doorway. Whereas girls, they don't pay any attention to. So, you know, they're more likely to just be missed long enough to find some other, you know, magical doorway. And I was, you know, and they even had a point where they're like, even boys that, you know, were more, you know, introverted or something, you know, just acted the opposite so they would fit in. And I was sort of like, well, that's BS. I didn't do that.
Well, the reason you bring that up is because you have a personal experience in this matter.
Well, kind of, yeah. It reminded me of the fact that when I was 5, which I don't remember, but I'm told that, you know, I sort of wandered off into the woods, you know, because we lived up in the mountains. And so I wandered off with their two dogs and, you know, the neighbors were on horseback looking for me and stuff. And I was found just at dusk, you know, walking into the edge of the woods, like, you know, the deep forest area. Yes.
So I was going to ask if you were ever found.
So which nonsense land did you go to?
I don't want to talk about it.
He never came back. This is it.
Yes. As you said, I am the changeling. That's why I don't remember it.
Yes. Quote, Kevin, unquote, that's happened to him.
Yes.
All right. So what did we think of the characters? I actually thought that Nancy was sort of an interesting main character because she had been to the lands of the dead. And so she really just wanted to dress up in sort of flowing clothing and so forth and stand very still all the time.
Right. Very, as she mentioned, pre-Raphaelite, you know, was it Waterhouse, you know, type paintings and that kind of thing. And
I actually hadn't seen Waterhouse paintings before. And so I looked them up and it's actually really interesting. I think that there was, The Lady of Shalott is one of his.
Yeah, I really like that style. And there's a few other painters, which I can't remember. That's like one of the primary ones.
And she had great musculature because, you know, she was always standing around for long periods of time.
Yes.
It's like yoga will make you strong too, not just weightlifting.
Don't forget about the Pilates.
Exactly. And then we have Jack and Jill.
The twins.
Who really, really hate that nursery rhyme. Thank you very much. They're not actually from the nursery rhyme. It's important to note. They both wound up in sort of a Hammer horror type of world, I think is how they described it.
Yeah, it seemed kind of like that. You know, I guess it was Jack ended up, or Jacqueline, who went by Jack, you know, ended up like kind of as the mad scientist, and Jill ended up as sort of the ward of the vampire king or something.
Right.
And,
yes. So yeah, Jill was sort of the classic, you know, ice queen vampiress in training kind of thing.
And, right.
Had a great scene in the beginning where she was explaining that, oh, she was on a diet. She only ate the rarest of meats so that her blood had so much iron in it, it would drive a compass nuts or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the unusual diet, high iron, you know.
Just like, and Nancy had a good line about most girls were dieting to get better complexions or richer boyfriends.
Yeah, and so, yeah, her roommate, Sumi, which I thought that was an interesting character. You know, she was sort of kind of, you know, Mad Hatter, Alice in Wonderland world, sort of.
If not short-lived.
Right.
Right. As it turns out, her hands got cut off and she bled to death, but, you know, that happens in books.
You should say that every time we run across death in fiction.
Yes.
But that happens in books.
Happens in real life, too, sometimes.
Well, yeah. So she was from a candy kingdom and kind of a nonsense world. So she was always just kind of doing crazy stuff. And I guess it was confectionery or something, because everything was related to candy. And
yeah, I had a lot of flashbacks to like Adventure Time episodes while listening to this book. You know, the Land of the Dead, you know, with the King of the Dead. And
sure.
You know, and then there was, you know, just recently having been Halloween, you know, there's the Dia de los Muertos and the... Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, the one thing I liked about it was that it, I mean, I don't know that if she came up with them or whether she had a bunch of, because I was thinking like, if I were doing it, I would have a bunch of tables and it'd be like, okay, candy, logic, you know.
Look, it must be codified.
Well, right. So, you know, that's kind of how I was imagining coming up with these worlds, but... What I liked about them was they weren't recognizable, like, oh, this is obviously exactly Alice in Wonderland, or this is obviously, you know, the vampire. I mean, some of them were more accessible because they were kind of common, but they weren't fairy tale common. Some of the specifics that they mentioned about the worlds were very unusual.
Right. I had assumed that Nancy had basically been in Greek myth because she had been basically taking the place of Persephone. But it wasn't quite that. She did allude to, oh, she had been there for 7 years, the same 1 year for each of the pips that Persephone had eaten in the halls of the dead or something like that.
Yeah, the pomegranates. And yeah, that was interesting that they had, you know, pomegranate seeds were very common in her world. And, you know, everyone dressed in black and white until they were, you know, earned the right to wear color and become part of the entourage and stuff like that. And it was interesting that they were able to transfer some of their powers that they had in those things into our world. Like, sure. You know, and it was very
there was one boy that lived in a world of dancing skeletons, which
right. Yeah.
I thought was pretty awesome.
He was Oingo Boingo world or something.
Yeah, exactly. And he was hoping to marry a skeleton girl someday. And he was able to make a skeleton dance. Now, of course, there's a mystery going on because someone is killing the girls and taking all of their best organs, apparently.
Well, their most treasured parts of them, right?
Right, exactly. And
I like all of me, so I don't know how that works.
Yes. At first, I thought it was Eleanor West, the school owner, because she had something unusual. She could go back and forth to her world whenever she wanted. And so I thought, oh, well, maybe she's somehow powering this by running the school for girls and then killing one just once in a great while.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if there was, you know, some sort of like a meta student that was going to sort of reveal themselves that could go to any, you know, any world. And
right.
That's why they were knocking other students off, because you couldn't share. It seems like you really couldn't share these worlds between the students.
Yeah. Right?
It's like each little world was sort of, you know, specifically crafted for each child.
Yes. Although, despite what Kevin said earlier, I didn't really get the sense that, you know, I mean, these were doorways. I wasn't sure if somebody else could go through your doorway. Nancy West was rescuing students at the end by sending them to her world, the right. ones that could survive in a nonsense world.
Yeah, and, well, they definitely had cases where people entered, like that one, I guess. You know, so it didn't, and they had instances where they said the same, like four or five people had been into some world since you know, this other person had or something.
Right.
But I'm not sure if it's whether only a few people can enter or whether a few people can find the door, but it's not like it's not unheard of. You know, maybe the worlds existed before the kids and they were just the closest match or something.
Right. And I got the impression that in the fairy tales, it always seems like the love that the kid has for the magical world is actually one-sided. But there was that one bit where one of the murdered girls, it turned out that there had been a doorway in her room to this world that she could have returned to, but it was only about the size of a mouse and hidden in a corner somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the feeling that it was a very one-sided sort of parasitic relationship.
Well, it's got some of the Shauna McGuire standard themes, twins and gender. So we have
Jack and Jill.
Twins Jack and Jill, who are opposites. Jill being sort of very feminine, very high magic, you know, vampire. And Jack being the mad scientist who is angrily affronted when somebody thinks that he killed someone to cut their hands off, because he'd say, well, you know, I wouldn't have done that sloppy a job, basically.
And he's like, and besides, I'd have used all the parts to do cool stuff, not exactly. Just the hands.
Exactly.
And then, you know, he's like, I would have been smart enough to wait until I was like the head of some biotech firm and they could just like sweep under the rug.
Exactly.
I've thought this out much more carefully than you have.
And they made the comment along, you know, after that, where it's like, you know, oh, every once in a while I forget how, like, you know, how creepy you are, basically. It's like, yeah, best to remember my nature or something.
Yes. Now, Jill, we don't forget her nature very much. The mystery aspect kind of ended when the dancing skeleton girl pointed next to Jack.
Oh, yeah. That I had also thought, you know, occurred to me, oh, maybe he's, you know, it's trying to kind of point to Jill, but it wasn't very strong for me, like whether for sure. It was just kind of like a, and so that's what I was wondering. Did this, you know, did this feel like a Scooby-Doo thing where, you know, there were not very many clues and you're like, well, how could I have figured that out? And I guess that was the major clue for me, but I still didn't really say, okay, that was obviously who it was. I still wasn't sure.
Well, it basically could only have been Jill or one of the quote-unquote adults, because everybody else was kind of together most of the time. And Jill sort of disappeared for a little while and then showed up again just randomly alive.
Yeah. She did kind of disappear, and then she kind of was like, well, why did you leave me? But she didn't seem really very, very concerned. And I actually re-listened to the book since I listened to it a while ago, and there were some scenes where, like, you know, everyone was freaked out except her and like one or two other kids.
Right.
You know, when things happened and stuff. And so you kind of figure, well, maybe she's just, you know, dispassionate or something.
She's just really, really creepy. And that, I mean, that's normal in that school. So that's not necessarily too big of a clue. But, you know, I think that the murder mystery was still satisfying because there were still enough options that it wasn't just like, no, it's this person. No, seriously, it's this person.
Well, since it was a novella too, you know, it was, it kind of, it came to a head very quickly, essentially. There was not a lot of, like, you know, what meandering around the world. You know, there was kind of like the build up and then like, oh, you know, kill, and like, you know.
Right. And I believe that this is the beginning of a series of similar stories.
Yes, Wayward Children.
So this is probably going to be, we're probably going to be like re-reviewing this as a novel at some point.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering was, you know, at the end, you know, the kind of the revelation, you know, the emotional revelation is that Nancy kind of, you know, she reads this thing that Sumi had written before she died, you know, basically saying, you know, you're the only one who gets to decide how your story goes. And when she kind of believes that, then her door just opens up in front of her. Mm. And so, you know, the moral of the story is, but it's still, you know, I thought it was good. So, but she goes back to her land. So I was kind of thinking, well, you know, I don't know if this was written as a first part when it was first written, but, you know, given the reception and it is now, I don't know if it was intended to be that, you know, from the start, but I was kind of thinking like, well, you know, is Nancy going to actually come back? My assumption is not, but, you know, you never know. You know, it could just be a, hey, we got to get the gang back together to solve something else. You know,
I kind of wondered if it was going to start to turn into like a modern version of like Nancy Drew, you know, short novellas.
Sure.
Short story, you know, format type thing. But, you know, when she basically exited the, quote, real world, which I guess is a four-letter word, it kind of made me wonder what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. did we have anything to say about the treatment of gender in here?
Well, that is a pretty common, as you said, as a common theme.
Sure.
With the author. And I will say it was interesting that it's not uncommon to have transgender characters in this kind of circle of authors that we read.
Sure.
But I don't think I've run across like an asexual character, at least a primary character.
Yeah, that's interesting.
The protagonist in this book is asexual, but
not aromantic.
Not aromantic, correct. It's having different values on those two different axes.
Right. Yes. This is one of those things where I think in a few centuries, assuming that we still have a civilization, we're going to be looking back and say, wow, people used to try to classify all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this is like sort of a huge change compared to, you know, years ago, even when we were kids or whatever. It's like, this would have been totally bizarre to even like talk about. It seems like, you know,
right. And part of that was like the hero's journey was supposed to be the hero was sexually potent, whether male or female. And it's just like, well, she is romantically interested in people, but not necessarily, you know, wants to take it any further than that.
So right.
We talked about the system of the universes. There's also the theme of magic doors and keys. I'm not sure if that's a Shauna McGuire theme or if it's a fantasy books for children, or I'm not saying that this is a fantasy books for children theme. This is sort of riffing off the fantasy books for children. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's a, you know, the portals, you know, the portals and keys and that type of thing is a pretty standard trope.
Right.
In a lot of fantasy novels. So,
and I was trying to think of what are the books that I've read that have this particular premise of, you know, a magical door opens. Of course, there's Chronicles of Narnia.
Which yep. they make fun of in the book.
Right, exactly. It's
explicitly mentioned, yes.
Chronicles of Narnia got it wrong because Chronicles of Narnia is a Christian allegory that he probably ripped off from a kid that told him the truth some point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was an interesting way to work it into the framework of the novel.
Yes. Was there anything else that we wanted to talk about?
I was disappointed in the lack of tea.
Yeah, no tea in the book.
Really? I thought there was a teapot, at least, or a discussion of making tea, whether they made it or not.
Okay.
I do remember in the car, so I wasn't able to take a thing, but I remember, oh, wait, he said, oh, do you, you know, I'll make you tea or something like that. But then later on, they make hot chocolate, you know.
Yes, there is cocoa, so that, yes. That's sort of honorary tea in this book. But they go really into detail on exactly how he makes individual, or she makes, who is making the cocoa? Was that Cade?
It was Cade.
Okay, yeah, so Cade makes cocoa perfectly for each person.
Right. And it's not just like, oh, you like cinnamon. It's like, you like the taste of tears and like, you know, screaming. And so,
it's like Starbucks.
So it's like, it has like a little bit of salt, but it also has like, you know, the Adventure Time episode where it
has the soul of a lobster.
The soul of a lobster, you know, to make the perfect sandwich.
That episode did cross my mind while I was listening to this book. I'm like, wow, it's like Jake's sandwich.
Yeah. Cause they were exploring kind of, you know, belonging, acceptance, and kind of like of yourself, society accepting other people. And the thing I thought was interesting too was it wasn't a total like, oh, this world was made for you. It's like this world is closer in alignment to you, but you know, like wasn't Cade, he was the one that he's born female, right. But he's gendered male.
Mm-hmm.
And so the world wants a female, and then it finally, you know, he's like, you know, slays the Goblin King, whatever. And then at some point the world's like, wait a minute, you're supposed to be a girl and you're not, you know, you're not gendering yourself that way. So bye bye. And so, you know, he gets kicked out because he's not like the princess or whatever. And that also kind of like, you know, Nancy talks about that where she says, you know, she's asexual, but the people in the world aren't.
Right.
You know, they have like, you know, the...
Right.
The,
you don't go to the land of people that are just like you.
Yeah. And so it's not just a, I wouldn't say escapism, but it's not like a, this is people that are all like you that will accept you completely. It's like, this is closer to maybe your temperament, but you're not guaranteed.
It's not quite your dream world, but it's...
It is kind of like, you
there's
know...
There's a bit of friction there.
It's like, you know, you fall in because you're sort of closer to this archetype that they're looking for.
So did we have favorite scenes?
I'm not sure I did. I mean, it was a pretty short book, maybe what, 5 hours. And I mean, there were definitely scenes that sort of stuck out, you know, it's like, you know, Kevin was just mentioning there was sort of this scene where she's talking about being, you know, I'm very asexual, but, you know, I do like romantic things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was sort of a very short passage, but...
Right. And Cade was sort of reacting in interesting ways, because when she was first talking about it, I thought that Cade sort of was reacting as though she was saying that she was gay.
I thought it was, maybe I'm wrong. I was interpreting it as that he interpreted as her rejecting him.
Ah.
And then when she explained, no, it's not you, it's just the whole concept. And he's like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is a pretty mature reaction for what appears to be like high schoolers, right?
Yeah, he was a little bit slightly older, but yeah, it was still...
But on the other hand, he's transgender, so he's faced some similar things, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Probably the Coco scene would be up there. That was interesting.
Certainly. I just liked a sort of throwaway bit at the beginning, which was when the teacher, Eleanor West, was bringing her in and doing her initial presentation of the house, there were, I think, some prisms around.
Yeah, there was a big chandelier with some large prisms on it.
There was some discussion as to where the prisms came from, and Ms. Lundy said, oh, from my tears, of course. You'll find that everything around here often has a very simple explanation.
Right. It's like, it's sort of her explanation of Occam's razor is sort of the opposite of what people would think, where it's just sort of like, well, oh, you know, the simplest explanation is usually what it is. Of course, tears are much easier than glass blowing or whatever.
Well, that actually is what most people seem to think Occam's razor is. They're wrong.
You're probably right that
right. There's some misunderstanding. When you come from a nonsense world, it makes perfect sense.
Exactly. It's just like, oh, yes, it's made of tears and, you know, then I laughed and it exploded.
Yeah, I guess I also like the scene where Nancy kind of uses her power for real, like kind of towards the end where she's like feeling, you know, super still, slowing her heart down so it stops beating like at all, and she freezes kind of magically, essentially.
Right.
And then she kind of becomes not really invisible, but becomes into the background, so she's not really noticed when the killer runs by and like.
That's another move straight out of Snow White.
You're right. And from Shauna McGuire's other book, too.
Like, right.
Embrace the narrative.
You know, I was sort of thinking, yeah, this is a very Shauna McGuire-y book, but Shauna McGuire is also Mira Grant, and it's not a very Mira Grant-y book. So when I'm saying all these things, I'm not trying to say that Shauna McGuire is, you know, limited or this is all she does. This is just a very specific pull of her writing.
Yeah, I mean, she's got a very clear set of books that are, you know, geared in this, you know, fashion. And, you know, if you enjoy this type of storyline and these ideas coming together, then, you know, obviously you're going to probably consume all of them.
It's like this maybe pen name is them. This strange attractor, and this name is this strange attractor, and they have the, you know, the wells that each thing cycles around.
Exactly. All right. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about?
Nope.
All right, so then, until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi.